I'm your host, Dana Giordano, and this is the More Than Running podcast. In this fifth season of More Than Running, I'm branching out to tell more stories that are untraditional from the track and trails and now beyond. More Than Running is hosted on the Sidious Mag podcast network, and every week I will be bringing you new conversations about the most inspiring and insightful women I know and want to know. Whether they're doing amazing things on the track or working tirelessly to promote the sport as industry leaders and entrepreneurs, hear how they've found success. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave me a review. Every message and subscriber helps me reach more people who are connected by this amazing sport. With that, welcome to the show. Welcome to More Than Running with Dana. I'm here with, I can't even believe I'm sitting here in your hotel room after you just finished fifth in the Boston Marathon, Emma Bates. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
How are you feeling?
I feel pretty good, actually. Like, I haven't really gotten enough food, so I'm a little, like, peaky in that realm. But my feet are okay. My legs are okay. Feeling good.
And we're going to talk about the finish of the race real quick, and then we're going to go back and talk about how you even ended up here in Boston again. But a fifth place day, how does that rank with what your goals were?
Big day, definitely what we expected, top five, but to be so close to the win, it was like, oh, I could taste it. And like, once I got to like the last 2 miles, I just, you know, it was slipping away from me. So that was like super frustrating. But when I look back at this race, I'm going to just look at it so fondly and just feel all the special vibes of the entire course. That was the most fun I've had in a marathon of all time. Like, it was just electric out there. So fun.
So people often say that you're smiling when you're running. Is it actually a smile?
Yeah, it is. And like, unless it's like the last like few miles, that might be more of a grimace, but it definitely, like, I like to kind of take in all of my surroundings because it kind of brings me back into the moment and makes me forget about like the pain or discomfort that I'm experiencing. So just looking towards the crowd and seeing their excitement and their silly signs or people that I might know. And that's like what is just gives me so much joy. And that's a genuine smile. Yeah.
So you're really well known for your marathon recaps.
Yes.
Which I absolutely love because it gives this inside scoop into your brain and how you think about running and racing. And, you know, this podcast is called More Than Running because it's really about who we are off the track, off the roads. And your personality comes out so much in those races. How do you stay grounded with the excitement, with the signs, and think about every part of the race and remember to break it out into all those parts?
It's tough because I try to be so in the moment, but like you also kind of want to go through like a flow state in the marathon. You don't want to think about anything. So that's tough because during those portions, I look back and I don't remember a single thing. So there'll be like 5 miles where I'm in that flow state and it's just like blank, which that's what you want for an entire marathon, but it doesn't happen. So I have to go back to those times that I really like relish. And I think, you know, it takes me a full like couple weeks to digest the race completely. And that's why, you know, I only do one post a day because, you know, I will go through and try to remember things each day. And it just comes to me like I don't plan out what I'm going to say. It's just like whatever comes to me on that day from what I recall. And so I'm going to try to remember everything, but there's definitely going to be things that slip away. But like it was just the most, I don't know, genuine experience of just joy. So there's going to be a lot of that in my recaps for sure. But there was a lot of like stress involved beforehand because, you know, I definitely told everybody that I was going to, you know, do big things.
Yeah, you called
your shot. Yeah. You know, talk the talk, I had to walk the walk. And that definitely put a lot more pressure on myself. But I think it served me well. I kind of had a mental breakdown, you know, the day before. But it was good to kind of get all those feelings out and be ready for race day.
So the mental breakdown, the mentee bee, as some guys like to call them these days, was that after the press conference?
Yes. So that was when I just completely lost it. And it's just like, you know, doing so much here and people seeing you everywhere and getting so excited to see you, which is so awesome. But like, I kind of just want to be in my own space and really focus. And it's hard to do that when there's so much excitement happening, and I don't want to get too excited too early. So it was like 2 days before, you know, the race, and it's like, calm down, calm down. And finally I just lost it and just like into tears, which, at the time I was like, oh my God, you're being so stupid. But again, like, we all have feelings and you just have to feel your feels.
You just have to. And who do you go to when you're feeling that way? Do you just let it out and process it by yourself? Or are you bringing your coach in, your family?
It's a mix of both. So I definitely, like, my coach and my boyfriend and my teammate Scott, like, definitely all of them, I kind of like express to them that, you know, I'm feeling this way, and they were there for me in a big way. And, you know, I have such a great support system in my team. You know, there's 13, 14 women on our team now. So, I mean, they know exactly what I'm going through, and to kind of fall back on them is always the way to go.
Yeah, you guys have an incredible team boss now that you've built up, and it's a really unique environment where kind of you're 800 to marathon. How has your team been supporting you through this buildup?
They're just there for me, mostly emotionally. Like, I have been training by myself this entire build. So that has been tough, just because, like, they are on a completely different schedule. They're training for the track, I'm training for the roads. So we don't see each other a whole lot during practice, but it's the after. It's like having brunch and having movie nights and having all these things. And just, like, I don't know, we just love each other so much and support each other so much in, like, every facet of life. Like, just so many, you know, inside jokes that we send to each other, or like, we have so many group texts that are going off all the time. So it's just nice to know that there's always somebody there to listen to you.
So you get back to your phone after the marathon. What's the group chat look like?
Oh my gosh, it was wild. So insane. So yeah, it's just like trying to catch up on everything and like really, you know, relish all of the things that the nice things that they've said to me. And like, I mean, they're texting each other during the race too. So it's so fun to go back and like see what their thought process was during my race as well. So I haven't gone through all of them yet, but I'm excited to go through them, because they say some really funny things, or really like just profound, like loving, inspirational things.
Well, if they're anything like me, they'd just be yelling, we need more Emma, we need to see more Emma on the screen. So last summer, you placed really well at the World Championships. Mm-hmm. You've gotten, you know, top three at a world major in Chicago as well. You ran New York. What does picking races look like for you? Because you don't really race a lot in between your marathons, which I think is a little bit unusual. So you are very much putting all of your eggs in one basket to an outsider.
Yes.
So what is the thought process of how you pick races? And give us a little insight into how this race makes you set up for the Olympic trials next February.
Yeah, I don't like to do anything but the marathon anymore. Like,
the honesty.
The training mostly, I just don't enjoy. Like, thinking about 10K or thinking about even a half marathon, it doesn't get me excited. And Joe's like, well, why would we race if you're not excited to race, you know, a half or a 10? Like, let's just go for the marathons. And so he's very supportive of that. And like, there's no like rust buster before a marathon that I run either. Like, not even to see your fitness.
That's risky. That's absolutely risky.
Yes, but he'd prefer it that way too.
Because
there's so much like just chaos that is ensuing when you do a race and you have to travel and then you lose time like with training and everything like that. And like, I just trust in my training so much that I can get everything I need to do in Boulder and know that I can do it well. So I may go a little bit harder in workouts than some people, but that's because I don't race ever. So that's my way of getting it out of myself. And yeah, I just love marathons so much that like, I love to just put all my eggs in one basket, because I know that I'm gonna reach new heights every single time I do it. So the consistency that I've had in each race and just the progress that I've had, I just feel a lot of momentum, and especially going into the trials, just because, you know, it doesn't matter what I do here physically, like on paper it doesn't matter, but like mentally this was a big day for me, just because I know that I can run with some of the best in the world, not just, you know, the US. So I think I'm definitely somebody to contend with now and somebody to not be messed with now. So
I think you made that very very clear today. Was top American something that was on your mind coming into this race? Was it more about I just want to compete with the best. And just want to. Top American happens.
Just want to compete with the best. I didn't even think about Top American at all. Typically, some of the races have like Top American prize money, but Boston doesn't do that. So like that would have been like the only incentive for me. But even if I wasn't the Top American, it wouldn't have changed my, you know, game plan or trying to get after, you know, the top five or, you know, even trying to win. So it's just kind of everything kind of faded away and just I put the blinders on. And this is my race. I just want to compete with everybody.
So Boston until next February. That's a fair amount of time, and you only do marathons. Do you squeeze another one in, or is this the training block to end all training blocks?
I mean, I definitely want to do a fall marathon. I think I said to some people that I'm ready to break an American record right now. So Joe definitely has believed in me so much. And typically, like, if you're doing well on our team, he doesn't really tell you that. He tells somebody else on your team. And then through the grapevine, you hear that Joe's excited. But he sat down next to me before the Boston Marathon and actually told me he was excited and told me I was ready. And so for him to do that, I knew like something was about to happen, something really special. And he was just talking so much about the race and was just so excited about the race beforehand that I just believe that completely. Like, he believes I can break an American record right now. If this was a flat course and perfect conditions, that would have been today. So that makes me really excited. So possibly the fall.
When you hear those words of affirmation, really, I mean, that's what I'm going to call them, but from Joe, do you already feel that yourself first and you are just waiting for some sort of reinforcement from him? Because you're a very confident person. You call your shot, you're public about it. Mm-hmm. You're public about when you have injuries. Were you looking for that, or did it just feel like the icing on the cake?
Definitely just the icing on the cake. I think I've always believed in myself in the utmost way. And even when I was a kid, like, I knew I was going to make the Olympics at some point and didn't know what in, but like, I just had that tenacity.
What was the other sport that didn't happen?
I mean, I really thought I was going to be an Olympic figure skater, but I never have owned a pair of ice skates. So that wasn't going to happen for me. And then it was like hurdling, like 100 meter hurdles. I thought I was going to be really good at that. And then didn't pan out. So joined distance running and then found my niche. And I feel like I'm ready to make an Olympic team. So.
So let's go back to this morning. We're sitting here. It's 3:14 p.m. the day of the race. What time did you wake up this morning?
I was up at, I think, 5:30. So it was like a sleep-in day for marathon race day, I would say. 5:30 is pretty late.
The infamous bus ride, the infamous mm-hmm. church. How do you stay grounded when you're around the best in the world and they make you sit in the same exact place? Do you listen to music? What's going through your head?
It was a pretty like boring bus ride. I think I took a nap for a bit. People were kind of chit-chatting and stuff, but normally I like to like talk to people. I don't like to listen to music. I kind of get like too much in my head and like kind of triggers like the nerves a little bit more because I used to listen to music all the time when I was in like high school and college and just was so overcome with pressure. So I just kind of like to look at everybody around me, try to chit-chat. And I mean, I had a lot of friends in this race, so I was able to talk to like Laura Tweet and Scott Fauble and Maggie Montoya and like all these people that are in Boulder. So it was just kind of like being chill and laughing and just, you know, having a good time and realizing how lucky we are to be here, to be doing this and just be healthy.
So the gun goes off. First mile was over 6 minutes. That's awkward. You're in a pack with so many women. Did you just feel really uncomfortable in that place?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, is awkward. It was just like so unexpected.
It looked awkward.
Yes. Joe had reminded me that I think last year or maybe years prior that it went out at 5:45 and he's like, it shouldn't go any slower than that. And then it went out, you know, above 6 minutes.
It was like a 6:08, 6:09.
Yeah. And then everybody was in it. And it just like, I get really claustrophobic when I'm anywhere, but like, especially around people. And so like, I was trying to be so calm, but I was like, can we just go already? But I didn't want to be the first one to make the move because I know that all these other runners have so much in them still. And so I was just kind of waiting for them to pounce. So they finally did, but it took a while.
So when the pounce happened, did you know who was going to come from? Obviously, there was a 2:14 woman in the field. Mm-hmm. You have your expectation of who you know, or you're just like, I'm ready, and whoever makes the move, I will be prepared.
Yes, it was basically anybody, anybody's game up there. And so it was just a waiting game. But also, Joe and I had planned out that if the move is made, I probably should stay with the second pack if that move is made, which he really wanted me to watch for Edna Kiplagat and Mary, because they both have done very, very well at this race, second and then first twice. So he's like, just be with them because they're going to get you to a great spot. But I didn't see them at any point in the race.
So on TV, we really didn't see kind of, you know, that first break. And then we actually didn't see you coming back up to the pack. So can you give us a really quick breakdown of, you know, kind of like the four acts of the race? So,
yes.
All right. You started slow, conservative, then a move was made. So if you want to just tell us how
that played out.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't remember what mile it was, but there was a 5:06 thrown down, I think. And I went with it, thinking like, oh, they're going to slow down, which they did eventually. But I was off the back of the first pack for quite a while, maybe like 3 miles or so. And then it just completely broke the field. Like, I think we were like single file for that bit. And I didn't look behind me, so I had no idea who was behind me still, but I just focused on that first group. And then they started to come back to me, and I found myself by myself, catching this group, this top group. And it felt comfortable once I caught up back up to them. And then we started running an even pace. And then after that, I found myself leading, you know, interchangeably with this pack, basically up until mile 22. So I don't, there's a lot of that that I don't really remember.
Well, basically, but every mile went fast. And it was like a 15 to 20 second range. You guys were going up and down and up and down. And it was really quite crazy in that way.
Yes.
I was like, this must be an uncomfortable way to run. Did you prepare for that in any way?
A little bit, like unknowingly, actually. Like, Joe had me doing a lot of fartlek runs. So, you know, you're going hard for a K and then backing off for a K, going hard for a K, backing off. So, like, kind of knew that pace, like, just by that feel. But that's how, like, the Kenyans and Ethiopians run all the time. They're just kind of, like, are always testing each other. And I thought that was really interesting, but also, like, I see through that. Like, you guys are going to come back. So there was times that I would surge with them, or times where I would just be like, I'm just going to let them go. They're going to come back. It's going to be fine.
So as American distance running has really elevated women in the sport, especially in the marathon, we're kind of at a point where you guys are saying, hey, it's not just the Kenyan Ethiopians game. We're here to play as well. Like, we're here ready to contend to medals. Did you have any of that in your mind as those last final miles were going on? Of, hey, like, I can try to win this thing.
Definitely. And I just, like, my biggest why in this sport is to try to inspire the next generation. So little girls that are watching this race, like, I just want them to know that you can do it. Like, there can be somebody up there that, you know, maybe, you know, on the outside perspective or on paper, maybe shouldn't be, but, like, I believed in myself so much, and you can too. So, like, that's always in the back of my mind, just, like, trying to fight for every place for them.
So the last 2 miles, you're with the pack, and then they pull away a little bit. How did that feel?
Oh, it was like, it was hard because I could taste the win and it was slipping through my fingers. And I knew that I was doing everything in my power to run as fast as I can, but I can't run those times. They were running 5:00s at the end, and I just haven't trained for that. We didn't really prepare for that because I don't think Joe really, I mean, he always knows that I could win. We could all win, but it's just like that final tweak in training that I think we still need to untap. So knowing that I can be up there and that's the final piece of the puzzle, that is super exciting. Just knowing that, like, I'm there once I start doing that kind of training.
So is this marathon number 6, 7 of yours?
I think 8.
8?
Yeah.
So, you know, we have 9, then 10's the trials.
Yeah.
And then we can have Paris be 11.
Heck yes.
10. No, 9, 10.
Yeah. Math.
Math. Who ran the marathon? So we're going to bring in Allison Lynch from Coros on, which is the right reason why we're all here. We're going to talk a little bit about your data in the training block a little bit. So welcome, Allison. So, Allison, you also live and train in Boulder, Colorado, too. So you guys, I like to call out, are like a little bit of a fake
altitude? Like you're at altitude, but kind of not, kind of yes. Do you actually feel the altitude?
Yeah, definitely do.
So it's real altitude.
It's a real thing.
Okay, perfect. Allison's going to talk through, from the course perspective, you had a great training block and kind of an ideal one that if we were to publish this of like you train really hard and then you taper, but more from the scientific perspective of what our watches can capture data. And I think we both might learn something from this, from your own data, because it sounds like Joe is the one that really digs into the very specifics and you're along for the ride to push things through. Did you say that's true?
Exactly. Like he is such a science guy and I just like to focus on putting one foot in front of the other. So it's so nice to have him to really hone in on the data and then have Koros as a surplus of that.
Yeah. And I mean, you've been a Koros athlete now for a few years, right? At least 3 years.
Yeah. Yep.
So you've been using the watches for a long time now. And so I think it's really cool to see in the Koros app just like the history of training data. And I know as we've been working together a little bit, you know, we've been diving deeper and deeper into your data and learning more about the different Koros metrics. And I think I kind of just wanted to talk about your training kind of leading up to Boston. I was able to look at your data, of course, with your permission, leading up to the marathon and your taper as well. And it was really cool to see, you know, how you built your base fitness. The base fitness metric is proprietary to the Koros app, and it's just, you know, personalized to you. And you can see a steady increase pretty much starting in January. And you can also see a steady increase in your load impact on your body too. I mean, you were crushing it in workouts. You were just like, I know your mileage was pretty high as well. I don't know if you wanna kind of talk about your training kind of starting back late winter, you know, early spring, what that looked like, because reflected in your Koros data, you can really see that build.
Yeah, I was able to tackle like longer and harder runs than I ever have before, and it definitely reflects in the data. But like doing or paying attention to the lactate threshold definitely shows you that I am working hard, but it's definitely like within the range that I need to be. And that was such a good catalyst for just, you know, not overdoing it. And that's something that I really try hard to pay attention to in training is like, you know, being within the range most of the time. And so like doing the threshold training, I mean, that's really all we have to do in marathon training. So you don't need to do a lot of the VO2 max stuff or go above that, especially with your heart rate. Like it doesn't need to be above a certain heart rate for, you know, extended periods of time. So it's just making sure that we're not surpassing that in training.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of like looking into your taper data too. According to Koros, you were 100% recovered. You're in the excellent range.
So
you're definitely just like ready to go. We have a scale of like 0 to 100, and you're 30 in terms of like your fatigue and training status, which is low. You don't want to be too low because that could indicate like, oh, maybe you're just like resting too much, and like you still want to have that edge left to you. So you're actually in like a perfect range in terms of like your recovery, and you're ready to go. And the Koros data kind of shows, you know, you had a minimal taper. It wasn't like the last several weeks. It was really just within like the last week or so. So I don't know if that kind of reflects also in, you know, your mileage and your training. Like, did you take a big taper, or was it kind of like just keep going and just push back a little bit, or how did you prepare for race day in that way?
Yeah, it's funny. Training with Joe, he doesn't like to taper too heavily just because you want to keep your body going. So that reflects that for sure. And it's, you know, I'm running 120 mile weeks in the peak of my season, but then the last 2 weeks I dropped down to, I think it was 100 the week before. And then this week will be around 80 or so. But also we don't want to like pull back too much on the intensity either. So we were still doing hard workouts, but also like leading up just a couple days ago, I did like a faster run. So it's like, yes, we're lowering the volume, but kind of keeping the intensity a little bit stagnant. So that really helps, I think. And that shows, you know, it not going under that 30.
Right. Yeah. Cause you like, you know, you still want to feel that intensity and you still want to like feel sharp race day and not feel like too rested, but rested enough. So it's really cool to be able to see that reflected in your data. In terms of race day itself, you know, I know Dana kind of talked through everything with you and like your race strategy and breaking that up. But in terms of like the Koros data, I mean, we were able to see that, you know, your heart rate was pretty consistent and you were pretty much 87% of the race, you were in that aerobic zone, which, I mean, you didn't even really reach that lactate threshold zone. Like,
do you look at it? Do you look at your heart rate at all?
Afterwards, yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
But not dirt.
No, there's too much going on to like really pay attention.
Well, it's a little small number too. Yes. It'd be kind of hard to see.
I just focus on the miles, the mile splits that the Coros gives me every time. But looking back each marathon cycle, it's so useful to have that data just to compare and see, you know, what we need to work on. Especially like just knowing like that I've improved. Like if you look back at my world championships or New York championships, that was like probably completely different data just because I felt so much better in this race and I have reached a different kind of fitness. And so that will definitely show us that like we're within the right range at this time. I was overreaching, I think, this last year, and I'm finally in the right heart rate and threshold training that I need to be in.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think it's really impressive that, I mean, you just looked so comfortable running, like it was visible, and it's cool to actually see, like, yeah, most of the race you were just kind of cruising along, like aerobically.
Yeah, you were chilling.
Yeah. Just chilling.
And it's actually funny because I think like the first part there, like, it said like you were in warm up zone the first mile, which is really funny.
Well, honestly, that first mile was a warm up.
Yeah, I mean that's slower than what I do for training. Yeah,
right, right. But yeah, no, I think yeah, it's really cool to see that data reflected, and like obviously you're super fit, and I know Coros and I know myself are really excited to see like how this year goes for you, and like how that data continues to show like your improvements.
Yeah, we'll have to put all the marathons against each other to really see the differences.
Absolutely. Yes, I'm so lucky to have the data. And again, like, I have a coach that is so nerdy about it, so I can just give it to him and he can, you know, translate it to me, or I have Allison to translate everything to me because I am very technologically inept. So it's so nice to, again, have you on here and just, like, explain to me as well. I've learned some things through you just talking about this right now.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Allison.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I have only a few more questions for you, okay, Emma. And the biggest one is, you finished the race. What's that first emotion that comes to mind? Is it relief? I'm so glad this is done. Or it's time to eat your Luke's lobster that just came through the door.
it's relief, but it's also just like trying to just... It's so hard to put into words, but everything kind of floods in, like everything I do this for. And, you know, I think about all my friends and family in that moment and all the people that came out and supported and just the history behind, you know, such an amazing event as the Boston Marathon. And this is my first time, and I really wanted to make sure that I was in the right physical space, but also headspace to do this Boston Marathon because I wanted to compete at my best. So I really feel like I crossed that finish line doing my best, and I couldn't feel prouder in that moment.
I couldn't either. I don't know, you're leaving me speechless. I mean, I got so speechless just watching. It was really, really absolutely incredible. I'll leave it at this. Thinking back to the times that running wasn't going so well, that person that you were, what advice would you give to her?
Just stick with it. Like, I mean, consistency is everything. And as long as you just keep showing up, I mean, that's such a Dez quote, but it's so true. Just keep showing up. Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, it'll turn around, I promise. And, yeah, there were so many times that I wanted to quit running, but I'm so glad I didn't. And I really brought all the people that supported me around me, and they lifted me up when I couldn't. And that's what got me through.
Well, we can't wait to see what you do. Can't wait to see what your next shot is that you call for this potential fall marathon and next year. Congratulations, Emma, fifth place at the Boston Marathon in a big PB. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of More Than Running. I can't believe it's been 5 seasons already, almost 50 episodes of the More Than Running podcast. You guys have been with me from professionally running on the track, and now to this new stage of my life where I'm experimenting with running, my relationship with it, and I'm bringing you guys all along the way. I truly love this sport, and my purpose in this podcast is to amplify voices that I find are extremely inspiring to me, and I believe have great stories to share with you guys as well. If you ever have any recommendations of someone you'd love to hear on the podcast, you know where to find me. I'm over on Instagram and TikTok at Dana Geo, or at the More Than Running podcast on Instagram. More Than Running is on the Sidious Mag podcast network and is edited and produced by Mike Zerzolo. If you like what you've heard, of course, leave a review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or just share with a friend. Until next time, cheers.